From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 21st day of March 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. We'll take a look at the upcoming grain stocks report with ag economist Daryl Good, in particular the corn number. Discuss the cash grain market with Ben Pruce at the Andersons out of Everly, Iowa, and discuss the weather forecast with meteorologist Ed Kieser for South America. And it all comes up during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. July wheat futures at $6.95 and a half finished a dime lower than nearby May. We're down a dime and a half. That's 10 and a half cents at $6.93 and a quarter. May corn futures at $4.79, up a half. July at $4.83 and three quarters, up a quarter. September at $4.81, down a half. And December futures $4.80, three quarters lower. March corn at $4.88, down a penny, and July at $4.94 and a half for next year, down 1 1/2. May beans down 25 cents today, $14.08 and three quarters. The settlement price July at $13.82 and a quarter, 27 and three quarters lower, and the August at $13.25 and a half, 28 and a quarter lower. September $12.31 and three quarters, down 19 cents. And November beans, the new crop, $11.77 and a quarter, finished 12 and a quarter lower. January futures $11.81 and a quarter, down 12 and three quarters. July of next year at $11.92, down 11 and a half cents. Bean meal in the May at $4.55.90, down $10.60. The bean oil at $41.02, 29 cents lower. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at $144 even, down 42 and a half cents for the day. June at $136.12 and a half, 7 and a half cents lower, and the feeder cattle finished the March up $1.40 at $175.02 per 100 pounds. Feeder cattle in the April at $175.27 and a half were up 62 and a half, and April lean hogs for the day at $125.67 and a half cents finished 87 and a half cents. The May though at $126.27 and a half, down 22 and a half, and June where the other trade really happened for the day at 130.32 and a half, down 47 and a half cents. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures in the May contract, $99.38 a barrel, up 48 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $2.90.07. That's a penny and a tenth higher. Ethanol futures at $2.84.09, up 4 8/10 in the spread now, just 5 8/10 of a cent wide. That's 3 1/2 cents narrower than yesterday. Natural gas at $4.31.07, down a nickel and 2/10, and diesel fuel at $2.92 and a tenth, just about unchanged. Gold futures for the day at $1,336 even, up $5.50, and the U.S. dollar at 80.1. That's down 0.08 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from the Urbana-Champaign area for the National Weather Service. Partly sunny, a high of 65 degrees. It's beautiful outside on the south-southwest wind at 16 miles an hour, gusting to 23 tonight. A 30% chance of showers. Those will come before 11 this evening. Partly cloudy to low 34. Saturday, sunny skies and 47. The winds will turn to the north-northwest at 14 miles an hour, and that means it'll be mostly cloudy on Saturday evening. We'll dip back down to a low of 25, and a north wind at 11 to 14 miles an hour will gust all the way to 20. On Sunday, sunny skies, the high of just 36 degrees. Again, that north wind remains with us. Sunday night, mostly clear and 20 for the low. Monday, during the day, partly sunny, a high of 37. Chance of snow on Monday evening, mostly cloudy and 23. And on Tuesday, chance of snow continues, mostly cloudy and 37 degrees. Tuesday night, a chance of snow, partly cloudy and a low of 19. And on Wednesday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high of 39 degrees. Closer to the bottom of this half hour, we'll check in on the South American weather. Ed Kieser, meteorologist, will be here with that look at the global marketplace. It is the 21st day of March, 2014. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. On the phone line with us to take a look at the futures market and what happened in the trade for this Friday is Mike Zuzlo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Happy spring, Todd.
Hey, happy spring. Well, at least it feels like it today, but we cool down again.
Yeah, right on.
Well, that's the way it happens. Tell me about the marketplace today and for the week and what you saw, what you liked, and what surprised you.
I think for the day and for the week, probably the biggest question on most people's minds that called in was, did we mortally wound the bull and the bean market? And I would say technically no. I think the weekly chart damage was held to a minimum. We still closed higher on the week. We had a higher high and a higher low on lead month futures. Also, the July Nov bull spread was higher on the week, too. So I think if you're looking at it on a weekly basis, you did not hurt mortally the bull in the bean market. I think what you did do, though, was fundamentally take away most of the reason why you would want to try and break above that 1460 resistance and lead month. And this is a really big number to be watching now if you are sold out of your 13 beans and looking for a place to re-own. If you don't get a good solid price break in the next 30 days and come back in, this is kind of my mindset anyway, come back in around the middle of April to get some longs back in place for 13 beans on a correction. If I would take out that 1460 level or see that taken out, that would be a level that I would say on a weekly close that would open up the upside to the point where it's worth stepping in and maybe buying back 25 or 30% of your 13 beans. But that's what I think struck most of us this week, because you actually closed higher in the beans, both the July and the November. We closed a little bit higher, but corn actually closed down. So if you take today away, the market was kind of on a path to take premium out of corn and put more premium in beans. And I think that was mostly due to the acreage report and the stocks report coming up, and then obviously the uncertainty about the demand side of the equation for old crop beans.
Yeah, certainly the acreage and stocks report will have an impact. People are looking forward to those. They're not next Monday, but the following one, released at 11 a.m. Central Time by USDA. Do you have your calculations done for them?
Yeah, I raised my corn acres about 200,000 to 92.6 million. I left my bean acreage number completely unchanged, and it was right there with USDA at 79.5. The survey, it's a smaller sample than someone like Doan's, who did 1,100 surveys. So keeping in mind it's a smaller sample, I think the biggest thing that I got back from the clients was that, yes, they're rotating out of corn to beans naturally. They are not, however, rotating out. In other words, they're not pushing their rotation or going outside their rotation in favor of beans, like we had talked about the months of January and February at a lot of your Outlook meetings. The conclusive evidence on this survey, at least, was I'm not going to go after beans. I'm going to go after the most gross revenue per acre. And after this recent market rally in December corn, if anything, if I go outside rotation, it's going to be to the corn if Mother Nature lets me. So that's why I bumped my corn acreage up a little bit. I actually have total acres at 257 million total for all spring and winter wheat acres, winter acres as well. And that is higher by about 1.5 million from last year, but it matches up nicely with 2012, 2013. And I did that because of the CRP issue and because of the prevent planting last year.
What are you going to be watching in the coming week?
Well, it's going to be mostly about pre-report positioning. I think you're going to see a lot of spread trading continue here. I think the trade will become a lot more conservative in nature in terms of how they go about this market heading into the following Monday's report. You'll probably also see the trade really look at the currency markets and the outside markets a lot more for guidance, and probably also really want the wheat market to perform. One thing that, you know, we talked about at the top of the show about it being the first day of spring and not really being warm that much, the models did turn a lot, both the European and the American this week, at the end of the week, to a warmer bias after the 29th, 30th, right around the report. And so if you would keep that warmer bias in the east of the Mississippi River, I think that would actually probably give a lot of reason for potential bulls in December corn to stay on the sidelines. So I think if those models stay warmer east of the Mississippi. That'll make a big difference next week in the corn trade especially.
And speaking of bulls, and I don't know whether I want to call them bulls, but let's just say when funds come in, they tend to be buyers at least the first time around.
Right.
I think it was the commercials that took the other side of that in large part. Are the funds still active in this marketplace?
They are, but I think this goes back to the outside markets and the currencies. We have had, I think, 6 out of the last 7 weeks higher closes in wheat. 6 out of the last 8 weeks, I think it's been, or 6, maybe even 7 out of the last 8 weeks in corn. You've got a lot of length in there, Todd, and so you really are at a situation in the feed grains especially where you're probably at a situation where you need to feed the bull. And if you start to see the dollar firm up and you start to see bond yields firm up, I do think the funds will look at that. And in other words, if you see the yen start to lose against the U.S. dollar, I think those become market-moving issues in the grains because we've had this nice move up here going into the end of the month.
Will they liquidate in that case?
Yeah, I think they would. I think they will pare down. You know, the biggest thing that we have to worry about after this week, when you take a step away from the acreage report and the stocks report and look more long term, is that inflationary bias that's been so helpful to the grain markets, that demand bias that's been so helpful to the markets here in 2014, is starting to give way, and it's starting to shape up, and what I'm talking about is the next 4 to 6 months, it's starting to shape up where we're getting back to weather drives you higher, but demand actually starts to drive you lower, and deflation starts to become another buzzword. I'm already starting to see that in some of the emerging markets. The emerging markets are turning a little more negative now in terms of fund activity.
Let's stay with demand. Can we look at the global marketplace in livestock? I had a listener, I believe on the web, call me about an hour before the program, wanted to know what the global livestock red meat market might look like and how that would impact, if at all, or offset any decreased usage which might be coming in the United States because of PEDV and or the lack of beef numbers here domestically.
That's a great point because, you know, this caller probably realizes that the energy market and the ethanol market, which was a good reason why the corn was able to stay positive today, is not going to be as powerful a market player as it has been in the last 6-7 years. So we are going to have to rely upon the hog and cattle and poultry guy again, and that's good news because that would be a solid demand base. However, that being said, I think to answer his question, globally the picture is mixed when it comes to the meat market. The global pork supply and the production levels I would consider adequate. I think we're starting to see China's demand peaking. The avian flu issue over there, the pork break-evens, an oversupply that's starting to show up would suggest to me that you're probably not in a great position right now in terms of global pork. That's why I think the PED virus is so beneficial to the futures market because it alleviates some of these concerns, but that could be a very short-term issue. Global beef, however, is real similar to the United States here this year. Mexico, Australia, Argentina, New Zealand, they're all pretty much in the exact same spot as the United States with smaller herds than normal and the fact that they need to rebuild. I think when I look at the overall feed export demand globally for U.S. Grain and oil seeds and meal, I think probably by the end of the second quarter you will have a peak in the feed demand. We may gain some weight by the hog market, but we're also killing less this year. And I think the broiler meat production especially has been real disappointing. January was down a little over 2%, almost 3% versus the previous January, and that was on slaughter down below 4% versus the previous year. That surprised me. It surprised the USDA. They should be building their flocks up here.
So when you take a look at this in the export market in particular, and you think of Asia, China, Japan both, and what they would import, are you concerned, for instance, that China said no to U.S. corn and then turned and went to Ukraine?
Yeah, I don't think that is as big a deal as the overall big picture that once China gets planted and the United States gets planted and Europe gets planted, then it really becomes a weather supply-driven issue. Again, if you peak in ethanol demand and your global economy is starting to slow because of what Russia and the United States may do to one another, China is slowing down in some respects on purpose to get rid of their shadow banking industry. And this is where the copper and the beans, it's a very complex story, but essentially they're using copper and beans to finance real estate deals in a shadow banking industry. And that's not healthy, and the Chinese government's trying to stop that. Well, that relates back to the livestock sector. Do we have artificial meat demand out there that we may not need here later on?
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great weekend.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. More with Dave Dickey and the Ag News when we come back. That followed up by Daryl Good and a look at the corn and grain stocks figure.
In agricultural news, the Senate Finance Committee will soon consider tax breaks for renewable energy, including expired biodiesel tax incentives. The breaks include the research and development credit and a provision that lets companies defer U.S. taxes on some of their foreign income. Other expired breaks include the biodiesel tax incentive, production tax credit for wind energy, and a tax credit for manufacturers of energy-efficient appliances. The panel has not decided whether to extend the breaks through the end of 2014 or 2015. Meanwhile, House Republicans have said they will not consider a short-term extension of the breaks. A one-year extension would cost the government $46 billion in revenue. The Environmental Protection Agency says it will spend 6 months reviewing its methods for approving new renewable fuels pathways to streamline the application process. The agency is asking the parties that intend to submit applications to approve new renewable fuel pathways to wait until after the review is complete. EPA says that its review will focus on improving the speed and transparency of the renewable fuels approval process. A new study from the Coalition for a Sustainable Agriculture Workforce says that too few scientists are being trained in agricultural areas of science. While the study found that life sciences and agricultural industry companies expect to increase hiring of trained scientists over the next several years, the CSAW says there is growing concern that they will not be able to find suitable candidates. According to the study, agriculture industry and life science companies expect to hire more than 1,000 scientist-level employees through 2015, or about 13% of their current agricultural scientist workforce. The largest number of scientists are needed in the disciplines of plant sciences, plant breeding and genetics, and plant protection, but nearly half of those hired will need doctoral degrees. Darden Restaurants said its fiscal third quarter earnings sank 18% as the casual dining restaurant operators Olive Garden and Red Lobster chains continued to perform poorly. For the period ending February 23rd, same restaurant sales fell 5.4% at Olive Garden, the company's biggest chain by revenue, and dropped 8.8% at Red Lobster. Overall, Darden reported a profit of $109.7 million, or 82 cents a share, down from $134.4 million, or $1.02 cents a share a year earlier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you that immediately after this program on our home radio station, that's WILL AM 580, and then by about 4 o'clock on our website at Will Ag and on many of these radio stations tomorrow morning, Commodity Week comes up. Our guest this week is Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain. Now up next, USDA will release an estimate of the amount of corn left in the nation later this month. It, along with the acreage report, also due the 31st day of March, are likely to set the tone for corn prices in the coming months. I'll have more on forward figuring the grain stocks number with University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good. Well, it's been difficult to correctly anticipate quarterly grain stocks estimates in recent years, says Daryl Good. There have been more than a few large surprises reflected in some of the estimates. The estimated corn on hand as of December 1st, 2013, for example, was surprisingly small and implied a record 2.426 billion bushels of feed and residual use of corn during the first quarter of the 2013-14 marketing year. That estimate started a price rally that was subsequently augmented by the surprisingly large export sales of corn. March 2014, corn futures increased about 70 cents from January 9th to March 7th, and the University of Illinois Ag Economist says while it's become difficult to anticipate the quarterly stocks estimate, it is useful to calculate the magnitude of stocks that might be considered neutral for corn prices.
A neutral estimate is one that implied that feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the marketing year supported the USDA's forecast of 5.3 billion bushels of use for the entire year. Even that calculation is difficult to make, however. The difficulty stems from the change in the seasonal pattern of feed and residual use that has occurred over the past 7 years.
Here's some history to support Good's assertion. For the 10 years from 1996-97 through 2005-06, feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the marketing year averaged 64% of the marketing year total use, in a range from 62 to 66%. For the four-year period from 06-07 through 2009-10, use during their first half of the marketing year averaged 68% of the total, in a range from 66 to 70%. And during the three-year period from 2010-11 to 12-13, use during the first half of the year averaged 74% of the marketing year total, in a range from 73 to 76%. The increase in feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the marketing year and the sharp decline in use during the last half of the year are difficult to explain, says Good.
Some of the seasonal shift in feed and residual use of corn may be associated with high corn prices and increased feeding of wheat during the summer quarter. This shift in some years may also be associated with early harvest and the resulting shift in calculated feed and residual use from the summer quarter into the fall quarter. If those factors do explain some of the shift, feed and residual use during the fourth quarter of the current marketing year might be larger than in recent years.
This, believes Darrell Good, is because corn prices are low relative to other feed ingredients, particularly wheat, and it appears that the 2014 crop will not be planted and harvested, particularly early in the Midwest. The percentage of feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the current marketing year, then, might be expected to be smaller than the 74% in recent years. The impact of PEDV on the number of hogs fed during the last half of the year, however, could also impact the seasonal pattern of corn feeding. Good thinks the balance sheet should show March 1 corn stocks of 7.147 billion bushels. Given the large amount of uncertainty about the potential seasonal pattern of feed and residual use of corn, a stocks estimate that varied from those calculations, he said, could still support the USDA projection of 5.3 billion bushels of feed and residual use for the year. The market will have to decide if the magnitude of use during the first half of the year is reasonable as a percentage of the USDA's projection for the year, or if the projection will need to be changed. You may read Darrell Good's March 1 Grain Stocks Report calculations on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
In just 2 minutes, we'll be back. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Ed Kieser.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It's National French Bread Day. It's also California Strawberry Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1869, Albert Kahn was born, a German-American industrial architect. He is considered by many as the father of modern factory design. He was responsible for the design of Detroit's first large auto plants for the Packard Motor Car Company. Kahn also designed Ford Motor's famous Highland Park plant, where the Model T was produced. In 1915, Frederick Taylor died, an American inventor and engineer. He is known as the father of scientific management. He introduced a scientific approach to time and motion studies. In 1994, due to bad harvests, there was a shortage of Japanese-grown rice. Japan's imperial palace began serving royal meals to the emperor and empress with rice grown in the U.S., China, and Thailand. And in 1999, Bertrand Piccard and Brian Jones landed in the Egyptian desert, having completed the first around-the-world hot air balloon flight. According to the BBC, they carried fresh food, including bread, cheese, and pre-cooked steaks, to last for 6 or 7 days, after which they made do with dried foods such as cereals and powdered milk. The flight began in the Swiss Alps and took 19 days, 21 hours, and 55 minutes. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Now, here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for the week. On the weekly trade, the nearby May contract went to a high at $4.91¾ and a low at $4.76. Remember, this is for all trade during the week. The settlement price was down 7 cents. May corn at $4.79. December corn at $4.80 was 7¼ cents lower than it was the previous Friday. Soy complex, May beans, $14.56½, the week's high, the low at $13.75½. Settlement price on the week was 20¼ cents higher than the previous Friday at $14.08¾. November beans at $11.77¼ finished 2¾ of a cent higher for the week. Bean meal at $4.55.90, up $11.90. Bean oil at $41.02, down $1.27. Soft red winter wheat went to a high of $7.23½ for the week, the low at $6.71¾. Settlement price there at $6.93¼, up 6 cents. July at $6.95½, up 5¼. April live cattle at $144 even finished the week, $1.25 lower than it did the previous Friday. And April feeders at $175.27½ were down $1.95, but they did not fill the gap on the way down that was left from a couple of weeks ago. Lean hogs, on the other hand, gapped higher this week, $125.67½. The settlement price, $6.37½ higher for the week, Friday to Friday. Now here's meteorologist Ed Kieser.
In this last weekly weather report for the season for South America, the focus is on conditions heading into harvest. During the past week, a frontal system has slowly moved northward, producing heavy rain in some spots. Getting into the specifics, will start in Argentina and work northward into Brazil. For most of Argentina, rain fell last weekend. Then as the front pushed into Brazil and Paraguay, dry and pleasant weather took over in its wake, allowing fields to finally dry out. And the forecast for the coming week is just what is needed for harvest operations to ramp up, as mostly dry and warmer weather is expected. Longer-range models are hinting at periodic showers and thunderstorms starting next weekend and beyond. That could eventually lead to periodic delays, but this next week will be prime time weather-wise for field work in Argentina. The slow-moving front impacted South Brazil and Paraguay the most this week. A couple of days of heavy rain have put field work at a standstill in many locations. Drier weather is just now returning. Improvement for field work is expected as we move through next week. Heading into the final days of March and early April, occasional rain should return. The recent rainfall did bring beneficial moisture for second-season corn, especially in Paraná. Farther north, Mato Grosso and Mato Grosso do Sul got some needed drying early in the week, but showers and thunderstorms have now returned and will be around periodically into the coming week. The rain will keep second season crops beneficially moist, but keep harvests slow. Dry weather dominated across Goiás, Sao Paulo, Minas Gerais, and Bahia most of this past week, with wetter weather now moving into the area, especially Goiás and Sao Paulo. Showers and thunderstorms will occur at times during the next couple of weeks, aiding second-season corn that has struggled in drought conditions.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.